Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. Hope you are doing well, or some approximation thereof. Our guest this week is Chase Bartlett. Who is Chase Bartlett? Chase Bartlett is a senior at St. Edward's, a college in Texas. He reached out to me via Twitter and wanted to tell me about his story, which is essentially that in the wake of COVID, his school's athletic department abruptly has killed its tennis program. And he'll tell you the details, but they're not pretty. And I think this is something that's unfortunately going to come up more often in the next few months, that tennis is a non-revenue sport. And with no Final Four, no March Madness, and with football this fall right now in some doubt, these are tough times for college athletic departments. We've talked a lot about tennis and the tours being suspended, but this trickles down to the college game as well. So today we talk with a college tennis player about some of the woes facing his program. And again, I think this unfortunately is going to be an issue that's going to become sort of increasingly resonant this fall. So without further ado, here is Chase. Are you a senior or were you a senior? I mean, why don't you just sort of orient us where you are and what you've been through, and then we can go from there.
Yeah, so I just graduated last week from St. Edward's University in Austin, yes. Texas. It's a Division II school. We finished this year ranked sixth in the country with six All-American awards and I think like a 3.9 overall team GPA. So it's probably the best team we've ever had in school history for a lot of reasons. And unfortunately, the school's administration just cut our six of our teams, men and women's tennis included, earlier this month, about 3.5 weeks ago, actually. And since then, we've been trying to do all these reinstatement plans, and we've been having calls, Zoom calls with the administration, and trying to figure out, you know, how can we get these programs back, and how can we find a place for these athletes.
So I'm going to cut you off periodically just to flesh this out. I mean, this is obviously Corona driven, or this is separate?
There's been some, you know, a lot of people are thinking that this is sort of just a cover up from Corona. But the school is, you know, very adamantly saying this is directly related to the coronavirus. You know, they were expanding programs. You know, 2 months before they cut our programs, they added an esports program and a track and field program, and looked like there was plans to build a lacrosse program as well. So, it's sort of confusing.
And so, just to be clear, tell me about your school.
Yeah, so my school is in Austin, Texas. Like I said, it's a Division II university. It's got, I think before this, it had 16 programs, if you're not including track and esports, which they just added. So now they're down to almost the bare minimum to compete in Division II, I think, and in their conference requirements. So it's a pretty good school. It's right across the street from UT. It's in downtown Austin. It's a nice place.
A lot of Lime scooters, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's your senior year, and things are, you know, last semester of college, and then all of a sudden things go sideways in a hurry. Before we get to the finances, I mean, just on an emotional level, what's this been like for you?
I couldn't imagine anything worse. It was almost like losing a relative, and that sounds ridiculous to say, but it was, you know, these are dreams that we've been working on, you know, my teammates and I since, you know, before fourth grade, you know, when we had our 10th birthday party, that was around the time that, you know, college athletes really start playing, and we've been playing our whole lives. And we had a shot actually this year at winning a national championship. And that's what made it, I think, so disappointing for us, especially is when I got here 4 years ago and I was a freshman, we were unranked. We lost to some pretty bad teams. And now for the first time in school history, we've got a team that can win a national championship. And then coronavirus comes in, and all of a sudden, you know, we didn't even know what was going to be our last practice, our last match. And then 3 weeks later, they cut our program. So it's pretty devastating for a lot of us.
You're a senior. You said you graduated. Congrats. You still have a year of eligibility, I assume, if you want it.
Yeah, so all of the spring sports got one extra year of eligibility, which means that, you know, I could transfer and play another year, which I'm planning on doing. I want to get an MBA and maybe play for a Division I school. A lot of my teammates aren't so fortunate, though, even though, you know, they can transfer. Say some of the freshmen, for example, we had two freshmen that were All-Americans, and I've known them for a really long time, actually, and one of them is quitting tennis because he can't think of going anywhere else, and the other one is going somewhere with no scholarship because pretty much the teams have been all booked up because of the timing of all this. So,
I mean, the transfer portal in all sports right now is a meat grinder. It's just clogged in everything from, you know, basketball to wrestling. You hear this again and again. I mean, I think college tennis is – I think we're going to hear more stories about this a little bit different from Division I schools, where the TV revenue from the NCAA tournament and the revenue from fall football, if that doesn't come in, that's going to affect the whole athletic department. It sounds like that's a little bit different than the situation at St. Edward. It's not like you had a huge football team that was spitting out millions of dollars in revenue for the whole athletic department.
Absolutely. We don't even have a football team. And our, you know, the sports that got cut, you know, I mentioned this to you earlier, but they're actually the revenue sports. You know, of the six sports that were cut, men's soccer was bringing in around $150,000 in revenue per year. Cheer was a great revenue sport that was cut. You know, they were bringing in around the same as soccer, and men's tennis was costing a measly $52. You know, how can you explain cutting?
$52 was your expenses.
Yeah. So, you know,
send me the bill. I got you.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you generate revenue, and what were the expenses?
So, about 3 weeks ago, we received a leaked document from a consulting report that was done in 2018 of the athletic department. And the way that they did it is they did what's called a contribution margin analysis. And so basically you factor in, you know, all of the expenses, right? You know, you factor in scholarships, you factor in coaches' budget, you factor in overall budget. And then you factor in, you know, okay, so say I have four scholarships, right? And I have a 12-man team. Then all of a sudden, you know, we're actually, you know, you might be bringing in money because of the people who aren't on scholarship. So it's not like football where there's a ton of scholarships or something like that. You know, our program wasn't even fully funded. So,
right. So the revenue's coming in, they're counting the full tuition of the players not on scholarship. Is that right?
Yeah, more or less. Yeah. And I think that's an overall contribution margin. I don't know if it directly equates to profit because that's a little bit more tricky to analyze. And the school has been so closed off about all the numbers in this, and you know they're a private school and they're allowed to be, but we've asked them, you know, what was the change in budget that even determined these costs, and they won't tell us that. They won't tell us how much they were going to save by cutting these sports, all this stuff. So
right, and we've heard this in other industries too, where this coronavirus is horrible, but it can also be used as a pretext. You know, it can also be used as a guise to make changes you wanted to make anyway. What let me ask you, sometimes in these cases, yeah, I've seen this with wrestling programs. I mean, sometimes the school will give the athletes a chance to revive the program if they can fundraise privately. Did that option come your way?
So it did. After, you know, several Zoom meetings with the administration, we finally convinced them to start creating a reinstatement plan. And their reinstatement plan asked us to fundraise $2 million in the first 30 days, which would cover the first 5 years of men and women's tennis operating expenses. And then after the first 30 days, we would need to raise $16.2 million over the next 5 years to create an endowment for the program, which totals $18.2 million in 5 years.
So in 30 days during a global pandemic, for your, you know, Division II tennis program, supposed to go out and get $18 million, give or take?
Yeah, and keep in mind, again, this costing, you know, it's costing $52. So we actually raised $600,000 from our alumni. And, you know, we had an incredible amount of support from everyone around us. We had a petition that was signed 20,000 times. And keep in mind, this is just some small Division II school that nobody knows about, really. You know, it's just us and our conference. And still, somehow, you know, we fundraised, you know, about 2.5 years worth of men and women's tennis, and they didn't even budge. You know, they weren't even looking for any kind of compromise or contingency.
If this were conventional journalism and not a podcast, we'd obviously want the school to respond and ask them some of these questions. But what, I mean, your perspective, obviously, but what have you been told? I mean, when you go to the school and you say, look, we actually ran, we had a $52 deficit, and now you're asking us to fundraise $18 million. How do you justify that? What are some of the things you're being told?
Well, they tried to explain that, and this is the analogy that the athletic director gave me. She said, basically, it's like a convenience stand, right? So you can sell these products, but you have to have money to buy the products to sell them to begin with. And that's where the issue is. It's not the product, it's the money, basically the budget that they can afford these athletic programs. And so to us, that still doesn't make sense because, you know, like we mentioned earlier, these programs weren't costing that much. You know, we've already raised, the athletic department at our school makes around $500,000 each year per the report from 2 years ago. We've already raised more than the athletic department made in total, right?
Your $600,000.
Yeah. And so golf raised about the same, about $600,000. And I don't know what soccer or cheer raised, but that's $1.2 million right there. How can you not at least strike a deal and try to figure out other creative ways, because the other teams haven't suffered at all at St. Ed's. The president and vice president, they weren't even planning on taking a salary. They told us, you know, like it would have been a humble gesture that they weren't taking salary cuts because other schools were, you know, their presidents were making big grandiose gestures by reducing the presidential salary to zero. Like, And we called them out on it. And so now, I guess, like last week, they said that they were taking voluntary cuts. They didn't say how much. But
what, I mean, let's sort of talk about these concentric circles. I mean, first off, to what extent are you concerned about college tennis overall?
In the beginning, I was extremely concerned about college tennis because like a month ago, we started seeing these programs dropping pretty quickly. So we saw, I think maybe 6 programs in 1 week get cut, along with all of our programs. And so, you know, it was looking pretty grim at this point, actually starting to feel a little more confident. Starting to feel like maybe it was just our school because, you know, we've seen a lot of great examples across the country of schools that are, you know, finding creative ways to manage the problem, mm-hmm. which our school clearly did not do. And, you know, if there's any message to any athletic directors out here that are hearing this podcast, that's, you know, the Wake Forest athletic director has come out and said, you know, cutting these sports does not always lead to an increase in revenue, right? There's not always that direct relation because a lot of these sports are partial scholarships. So schools have done really, really creative things across the country. And I think it would be foolish, you know, for athletic programs to not mimic those ways and figure out ways of, you know, at the very least, just don't cut a program. You can look into reducing scholarships. You can look into reducing coaches' salaries, but you can't just cut a program because that was 55 years of legacy right there for a lot of our alumni.
And you clearly are impacted by this, but as you say, you're a senior, you graduated. What about your teammates who are freshmen and sophomores and committed to this program and now are suddenly being told essentially the factory's closing?
Yeah, so they're forced with a pretty desperate choice, and that's between, you know, their dreams that they've been working on their whole life and their home, because, you know, we all love St. Edward's University. And so, like I mentioned earlier, we had this one guy, he's a freshman, he's been playing tennis since, you know, I've been playing tennis with him actually at Austin Tennis Academy since he was probably 10, and he's a great player and he was All-American this year. And for him, that's it. Like, he's thrown away the rackets, you know, I mean, given up. So it's really sad. I just can't express how bad it is. You know, some people are transferring, others are just quitting. It's.
Have you done this as a team dissolving when you can't even see each other? When you guys sort of having team meetings over Zoom?
Yeah. So 2 days ago, we had our final team meeting with Coach, and that was when he announced that, you know, even though we raised $600,000, that we were just going to kind of move on, because some of these guys, even if there's not a lot of opportunities to transfer, you know, it's really crucial that we give everybody enough time to find a place, you know, even if they're not on scholarship, you know, still to find a team and play. So that's sort of why we called it 2 days ago.
How's your coach doing?
He's all right. He's actually, he's one of the most energetic and joyful people I've ever met in my life. And he's a real role model for me. And he's been a role model for us through all of this, you know, even though he's probably the one that suffers the most. He's the guy that's, you know, I know for certain that he's going to find this great place somewhere else that's better for suited for him. So I think he's doing all right. You know, he's been the one that's encouraged all of us to just keep on keeping on. So,
what have you learned from this?
Well, first of all, you should never cut your teams unless you absolutely have to. I've learned a lot in terms of what it means to be a leader, because not a lot of students have been given the opportunity I have to speak directly with the administration, you know, maybe dozens of times. And I've also learned, you know, in terms of business, it's so important to be transparent. None of this was made in transparency. You know, at one point the administration came to us and they said, you know, actually, before we cut these programs, we went to the alumni to see if fundraising was even possible. And when they told us that, I was on a Zoom call with 12 other alumni. And each of the alumni was like, I didn't get a message, you know. And so in reality, they only went to one guy who was pretty wealthy and his wife was on the board of trustees. And they asked him, hey, can you spare a few million dollars to fundraise this program?
$18 million?
Yeah. And so that was their... You know, they've been lying the entire time, and you know, it's just, it's created a culture of, I think, hate towards the university from its students, from its student athletes. And so, you know, at the very least, if you're going to make tough decisions, make them empathetically, make them transparently, communicate well, and then do everything in your path that you can before you make this decision. So,
how have you managed to sort of cordon off the unpleasantness of this experience from your 4 years that you seem to have enjoyed? I mean, how have you been able to sort of detach this disappointing last few weeks from a college experience that you seem to have otherwise really enjoyed?
That's a great question. And that's something that I think a lot of us have been struggling with, is because we love St. Ed's so much. And then, you know, at this point to be sixth in the country and your school doesn't even want you back, really. It's pretty heartbreaking. And the way that I've been handling that is just, you know, seeing the administration separate from the faculty, from the students, from everyone who made my experience at St. Ed's what it is. You know, the administration had no impact on my time at St. Ed's other than killing the team, basically. I think the faculty were where I learned the most, where I made the best connections, you know, and memories that I made with my teammates are going to stay with me for the rest of my life. So there's no reason to think poorly about that now just because of a couple of people not willing to work with us.
I noticed too that, like a lot of teams, your roster is very international. I think half the players, right. I think six of you come from Texas and six of you come from outside the U.S. How are some of your teammates who are crossing oceans here dealing with this?
Some of them are looking for new places. Some of them are just giving up, like I said, on tennis. And you know, that was one of the reasons why it's always a terrible idea to cut sports, you know, especially like tennis, because tennis is such an international sport. It brings so much diversity to campus. This is one of the talking points that we had, is like, did you even consider that, you know, in the past 4 years, I've had teammates from Greece, Serbia, Germany, Croatia, Poland, Honduras, Spain, you know, England, the list goes on, probably like 10 more countries. And, you know, we're a small Division II school in the middle of Texas, and all of our students are from Texas, you know, like, it just doesn't make sense to be cutting off, you know, my roommate, for example, he lives in Australia, and he's fourth generation, I think, St. Ed's tennis player from small town. Yeah. Oh, so you got St. Ed's in Austin, Texas, super small university. And then you've got my roommate, Zach, who lives in Mildura, Australia, which is like 6 hours inland from Melbourne and in the outback, you know, and they've got this little tennis academy there. And, you know, I think there's four or five guys from that tennis academy that have come over 20 years, you know? And so there's this great alumni connection and resources for guys like him and for guys like us. And, you know, it just shows that how athletics keeps, you know, a place that might be a sort of obscure for most Americans, and it's got this global base. So it's pretty cool. And actually really, really sad to see it go though.
Did you travel? I mean, did you guys have a budget where you guys were doing a spring trip? Or
Our spring trip was to San Antonio this year. We didn't get to do it. It was canceled right before we went. But, you know, I think at one point we went to like Durant, Oklahoma for a spring break trip. And, you know, so we weren't, wow. We weren't exactly this, you know, crazy traveling team to
spring Indian break Wells. Durant, Oklahoma, though.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with Durant, Oklahoma.
No, but I think, you know, I mean, sometimes one of the complaints you hear is, you know, the football team brings in all this revenue and the golf team gets to go to New Zealand for spring trip. And it sounds like this is not profligate spending by your coach here.
Yeah, our coach was within budget every single year. In fact, the budget was so low. And this is a problem with the athletic department, is that they had, over several years, they had been keeping the budget so low that every year the teams went over budget and actually had to fundraise in the beginning of the year just to compensate for those costs. And it's not a very viable way of doing fundraising, because then you have coaches who aren't motivated. You know, they're not fundraising for new shoes. They're fundraising for covering expenses that the school should already cover. I mean, our budget was $32,000 this year. That's not killing anybody, really.
Your budget's $32,000. You came in $52 under budget, and they're asking you to raise $18 million to keep this thing going. You're a businessman. That's some interesting math. Have you been? Is there any sort of outreach? Have you been in touch with other tennis players? I mean, I think I mentioned. I think Akron, and I suspect, sadly, this list is going to grow, especially if these fall football revenues don't come. Are there contact that you've had with other college tennis players going through this?
There was one girl who reached out for me. I forgot the name of her program, but her program got cut and she saw a couple of my videos and my articles and wanted to do something there. But at that point, you know, we had already kind of given up. And so we reached out to a lot of people, trying to find a lot of creative solutions. You know, we were trying to maybe last minute arrange a fundraising event with, you know, one or two professional players and one or two St. Ed's players, and maybe make a some sort of charity event. That was a good idea. We didn't have enough time.
Right.
And you have 2 weeks to fundraise $1 million, basically, and it's not possible.
I mean, we should add, you know, during a time when unemployment is
exactly
25% and the market's gone down 20. So last question, if Sports Illustrated declared St. Edward's the D2 national champions, would you take issue with that?
Yeah, I definitely would. I think, you know, I wish we could have done that, and they took that opportunity away from us. You know, this year coronavirus canceled our opportunity of a national championship, and it's their fault, actually, for taking away next year's opportunity for a national championship, because we had the same exact team and we were going to get really close. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. No, I saw, I think you had five or six All Americans and, you know,
yeah.
Website didn't lie. Well, I mean, it sounds like you are, placed in, we use this word unprecedented, but this is not a situation I suspect you would have thought you'd be in when second semester senior year began. But it sounds like, if I'm going to sound like your parents here, I mean, it sounds like if nothing else, you're learning some lessons, but I also, yeah. It sure seems like you're handling this with a lot of grace. So.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope it's, you know, helped some of the other people. At the very least, it's, you know, our efforts gave a lot of people hope. It brought a lot of people together. So that was great to see. And it has been a big lesson for all of us. I think that, you know, sometimes life just isn't fair, but you know, we got to enjoy the moments when they come. And it was, you know, heartbreaking to lose the possibility of more moments, but you know, I enjoyed every single minute I spent with my team. So
good attitude. And if we follow you on, so we're gonna find you playing for that fifth year in the spring, you think, somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere, hopefully.
Looks like you're staying in shape. Looks like you haven't you haven't ballooned to 260 pounds playing Twitch. I mean, it looks like you
I've been trying to stay in shape. It's hard to keep motivation for sure, but my girlfriend plays soccer at St. Ed's too, and we go on some runs and play some soccer, so that's keeping me fit.
There you go. You can play tennis now, though.
Yeah, I guess my roommate, he's living about 20 minutes away, so we play tennis every now and then, but right now it's just, you know, trying to figure out where schools are. I never thought I'd go through the recruiting process again.
Yeah, exactly.
For my life, especially, you know, as a graduated player. So we're just trying to figure out, you know, how things are. It's definitely unprecedented, like you said, so.
Right. No, I think a lot of players, they did not think with a degree in hand, they would be doing orientations and having Zoom calls with assistant coaches trying to find rosters. But I appreciate this. I mean, again, I think sadly, we're going to see this more and more, and not just in tennis, but I think a lot of non-revenue sports are in for a bit of a reckoning here, especially if there's no football. But it's one-sided, and we admit that, but it does seem like this has not been particularly well handled by the adults. So I hope there's a happy ending here for you and your teammates.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate you taking the time to cover this. So.
All right. Stay in touch. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Thanks for Chase for his time and for telling us a bit about his story. We hope that works out as well as possible. Thanks as always to Jamie, our trusty producer. Jamie, I want to ask you, as a former college athlete yourself in what I assume is a non-revenue sport, what struck you about that conversation?
Yeah, that's a good assumption. It was really interesting to hear. I mean, first, it's great that he's so passionate about it, and you know, kudos to him for, you know, reaching out to you, getting on this podcast, and you know, getting a space to talk even more about the impacts of the cuts on the student athletes and what they're doing. But I went to a really small Division I school, but I can kind of relate to him with, you know, programs who are, you know, not costing much, or you know, also not making much, and being in at a school, a very small school with no football team, and how that affects the players in different programs. So I feel with him, especially as a senior, you know, to have, you know, you talked about it, whether it's an international athlete who's coming overseas to play and now they're left, like, what do they do? Because my school as well also had a lot of international athletes, and I had so many friends in that position. So there's so many parts of the situation that he was saying that I can really relate to. So, you know, my heart goes out to the St. Edward's Hilltoppers, which, you know, coming from a mascot that was the Peacocks, it might actually top St. Peter's where I went, because the Hilltoppers is a great, great name.
Western Kentucky, I think, is the Hilltoppers as well. But I want to know, how aware were you of where the revenues were generated? I mean, if you're playing in a non-revenue sport, to what extent are you aware of how precarious the situation is? I mean, when you were in school, what was funding the athletic department?
Honestly, I, again, was very impressed with all the research and how much he knew and reached out, because I think I realized and knew which sports, you know, made the most money and which sports actually had donations or just a lot of money that was from alumni and things like that. But I can't say that I was really in touch with how the school was making money and how we were, you know, able to compete as a Division I program. I know the fact that my school used to have a football program and it didn't when I was there. So I wasn't very aware how that was working, and I kind of feel a little ashamed for that. I feel like that's definitely something I should have known, especially, you know, given Chase and all he's doing. It's really a good role model for a student athlete just to be aware. It's easy for a big time Division I football player to see all the bells and whistles in a, you know, in a stadium or in a facility and kind of understand where those, that money is coming from. But for a smaller school, when you don't have all those pretty shiny new things, you're almost not, you're not aware that the money is coming in as much as that. So it kind of gave me a little eye opener there as well. I wish I was a little bit more in tune with how my school was making spending money.
Yeah. And you know, you say you hate to be the ogre and you hate to sort of wag your finger, but I do wonder, you know, some of these non-revenue sport athletes, you say, boy, we have, it's pretty good life we have, and we've got these snazzy warm-ups and we're going on all these trips and we've got a spring break trip overseas, and wait, we don't charge money. We don't sell tickets. What exactly is funding this operation? And right. I think sort of there's going to be a cold reality here. His school is private, so I'm not sure it's quite relevant, but I also think this is where all of these foreign athletes that play on the team can sometimes hurt tennis. And I think as he mentioned, I think it's very healthy to have an international recruiting base. I think by all means, you know, it's a great way to diversify not just your team, not just your athletic department, but the whole student body. But some of these programs where 10 of the 12 players come from overseas and the coaches are really candidly abusing a system. A lot of them are way older than the conventional kids of their year. When the athletic department has to make some tough choices and you have to cut a team, especially at a public university where it's taxpayer dollars and 10 of the 12 kids on the tennis team don't come from the United States, much less the state that's the tax base, I think the decision to cut the program gets a lot easier. So anyway, I mean, unfortunately, I think this is something that all college athletic departments are going to have to reckon with this fall as the revenues have really, really dropped, and it's going to drop even more dramatically if there's no football. Let's change gears. It is May, whatever it is, 19th, 20th, and there is as of now, the U.S. Open for 2020 is still a going concern, at least in theory. There was a meeting with the White House recently where a number of sort of a tennis finally got its audience that it didn't have at the initial sports meeting. As I understand it, there was a range of opinions. Some tournament directors, particularly from the West Coast, were very suspicious of having any tennis events before there was a vaccine. Other tennis officials were much more optimistic and much more willing to be creative. We talked about this a bit last week, Jamie, but any further thoughts on the prospect of a 2020 U.S. Open, which as of now is still at least being discussed?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Governor Cuomo came on, you know, this week and talked about the fact that New York State is ready and willing to work with major sports teams, you know, that are willing to play without fans, kind of is an interesting thread for the U.S. Open. Of course, they have been, as we've talked about, exhausting all the different ways. And we talked with Dr. Brian Hainline, who also outlined exactly what would need to happen. But I am still a little skeptical, just given the amount of, even if you don't have fans, the amount of people involved in organizing the event that would still need to be there. It's a huge risk, and I know that this is what all sports are facing, but it's an interesting development, especially given that things are starting to open more and more.
Let me ask you two questions. A, do you surmise, I mean, I think one of the big variables here, do the top players come? Right. And a guy, you know, a woman, a man ranked number 80 who hasn't had a pay, you know, who hasn't had any prize money since February, sure. If you're Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Novak Djokovic, Rafa Nadal, three of the four of them are parents and all four of them are married. In at least three cases, they're probably going to have to quarantine at some level. I wonder, I mean, on the one hand, you say, yeah, they play for the majors and this is a major. And when we talk historically, we're going to still consider this a major. But I wonder if the four of them are buying in. And if they are not, is ESPN as enthusiastic about going through with this as they are right now? I'm curious whether the stars are going to do the risk reward analysis and decide it's worth it to play. Any thoughts on that?
that's been my concern from the beginning. You know, I said to you that the level of competition at the tournament, even if it were to be held, even if everything were to go as planned and everything went smoothly in terms of social distancing and quarantining and no fans and all of the setup, what is the competition like? Can we even call it a Grand Slam if those top players aren't there? I mean, it really will feel like another tournament in the US during the summer. And, you know, that's not to say that no tennis is better than that sort of tennis, but right. You make a great point about, you know, ESPN as a broadcast partner. They're going to have all this set up and all, you know, pay all this money in order to cover an event. And they're not going to have the Serena Williams interview overlooking, you know, the crowds,
right.
You know, and that classic US Open.
Right.
And I don't know, you know, do as many people watch, or does it feel like the UFC, for example, where I'm sure people who hadn't really bought a UFC pay-per-view coughed up the money and decided that, hey, I didn't have anything to do for the past 6 Saturday nights, and now there's some actual sporting event on TV, so why not? I'm home. I, you know, pay for this and that's it. And, you know, the US Open won't have a pay-per-view price tag on it. So it's really interesting. And I'm not sure whether or not this is an opportunity for tennis to kind of break out into the masses, so to speak. And if they do, if that is actually good for the sport, if we don't have the Rodgers and the Rafas of the world playing during that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the flip side, you could say, listen, the average age of the four players we're talking about is about 36. So maybe it's a disguised blessing if this means more eyeballs on Naomi Osaka and Dominic Thiem and Tsitsipas. Maybe this is actually a blessing in disguise. I mean, I think the other thing is I hate the word optics, which is fast becoming one of these hardened cliches, but I do think there is a huge PR component to this. And on the one hand, you could say, as the UFC has done, hey, we're back in business. Think about all the jobs and the commerce we're creating. This is symbolic. We're showing we're back at work. I also think this could be disastrous for tennis. And in Queens, which is really ground zero for this whole global COVID crisis, if somebody says, listen, two miles from here, we have refrigerated trucks carting out dead bodies, and you guys are going ahead with a tennis tournament, I think this really needs to be positioned very cautiously and carefully. And we see, you know, if this is going to take thousands of tests and there's a test shortage in Queens, if a player tests positive, if this is going to divert resources in any way, this could be absolutely disastrous for tennis that always needs to be cautious of being seen as elitist and out of touch. If there are still people dying in hospitals in one neighborhood over, you've got athletes hitting tennis balls for millions of dollars so that ESPN has some programming, I think this could be catastrophic from a PR perspective.
There's as much risk as there is reward here. And it's a really careful line that needs to be towed. And I'm not sure if we're there yet. It's there's still so much to learn. And the fact of the matter is that eventually, you know, as you said, we're at the end of May here, turning the corner on June. The players and everyone are going to have to know very soon. I mean, if you work backwards from the US Open timeline in terms of quarantining and preparation and flights and all of the stuff that goes into it in terms of just getting the players there, they need to know sooner rather than later whether they're going to make that commitment or not.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris Clary was on Tennis Channel the other day. We were talking and he said something I thought was a great point, which is, if nothing else, we're sort of seeing tennis exposed and naked, and information that was hard to come by is now readily available. And one of the things we're learning is, you know, A, just how dependent the US Open is on media rights and ESPN in particular. I mean, again, the amount that ESPN paid for those rights probably will not be replicated in the next deal, but as long as you have a valid contract, use it. We're learning just how dependent the USTA is on the US Open. I mean, it's got to be not 90%+ of its revenues. Mm-hmm. And we're also seeing how dependent the tennis infrastructure is on the USTA, at least in this country. So, you know, if nothing else, we are getting a glimpse of the realities of tennis. And again, it's a little strange to me. Part of me really hopes this happens as a fan of the sport. The other half of me really shakes their head. If you've spent time in Manhattan recently, the idea of holding a large-scale tennis tournament, even under these strange circumstances, a little baffling to think you could pull that off. I guess we will, not unlike a sporting event, we'll see how this folds and we'll see what the result is. But again, as we speak in the last week of May, Jamie, the 2020 U.S. Open remains on the calendar. So go figure.
I'm with you. I go back and forth every day trying to decide whether or not I'm for or against. So as you said, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what plays out.
We are for health and safety. We are for tennis thriving and making the right choices. We are for players making a living. And as long as those things are consistent, go ahead and play. But as long as there is inconsistency there, maybe see you next year, folks. But anyway, let's leave it there. You got to run. I got to run. As always, you were great. Pleasure talking. Thanks to Chase. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Keep your guest suggestions coming. Leave a review. Rate this. Also, check out SI's new podcast that Jamie and I are both part of, The Record, which takes a deep dive into sports stories from the past. Great listen. Have a good week, everyone, and we will have another guest next week.